All right. Thanks for joining us again. Before we get started, I've heard some people say, like, you know, they've held some comments back because they don't want to talk too much. Please don't worry about that. I want you to talk. I want you to share your wisdom with us. So please feel free. If you have, you know, have something to add, please do it. So for just a few minutes here at the beginning, I want to go back to Acts chapter 4, where we were last week. Enough people said something about us missing part of the prayer there in Acts chapter 4, so I wanted to go back and grab this piece that we didn't talk about and spend a little bit of time there and then go to Matthew chapter 6. And one of the people who pointed out isn't even here. Can I get somebody just to give us a quick rundown of the situation in Acts 4? We were there last week, so maybe you remember a few things. What's the broad picture of this prayer? And so what's going on? Just a quick summary.
They were in prison.
Yeah, they were in prison. So why?
Peter and John was in prison for preaching the word of God.
Right. Peter and John are arrested for preaching. They caused a stir by healing somebody. They're arrested. So they're released, and then they gather with the brethren, and then they pray. And that's where we get this prayer that we worked with last week. And we said a lot of good things about it. We had a great discussion last week. I guess you could say the general setting of the prayer is in persecution or trouble that's coming. And we won't take the time to read the whole prayer again, but we didn't actually talk about the actual request of the prayer. So we talked about all the other things in it, but verse 29 contains their actual request. So Acts 4, verse 29, "And now, Lord, take note of their threats, and grant that your bondservants may speak your word with all confidence while you extend your hand to heal, and signs and wonders take place through the name of your holy servant, Jesus." And then verse 31, as we noted, recounts God's answer to this prayer. So what are the actual requests of the prayer?
Prayer for boldness.
For boldness. And then we see that's answered like explicitly in verse 30 when we noticed the prayer for boldness last week. And there's more that we could say about that, but I don't think we need to. What else do they ask for?
I think it's more basic than that. They're asking for continuance.
Yeah, that we'll keep doing this in spite of what's going on. So if that's sort of the general idea of what they're asking for, remember the setting. Trouble's going on. What did they not pray for?
For the trouble to go away.
What's up with that? They didn't ask for the trouble to go away. They just said, give us boldness to keep doing it with all this trouble. What do you make of that? Go ahead.
I think they recognize the purpose in it. Again, you know, oftentimes we pray for God to relieve us from whatever we're going through because we don't recognize that it has to happen that way. Mm-hmm. And also, this is something Jesus promised them. They would suffer many things in his name. So they know this is part of the script. Help me remember my lines.
Yeah, I like the way you put the help me remember my lines. anyone else want to say something about that? We're not quiet this week.
Well, it just shows what their main concern is, that they want the word to be spread and not themselves to be comfortable.
Yeah. So we've talked with some of the other prayers before about, you know, not bringing our own way of solving this to God, but setting the problem out before him and asking him to help us with that. And so maybe you can see this here too. And, you know, that God's work continues, that the word continues to spread through them, even despite all of the trouble. And I think maybe sometimes this would be a hard one for us to reckon with, or at least, you know, speaking for myself, maybe I won't decide not to speak for y'all. But boy, it's easy to be comfortable and want to stay comfortable and not be willing to be uncomfortable. And so, you know, my inclination would be to pray, you know, make the problems go away, make this easy to, for the work to happen again. And yet, the example here is much different than that, that we continue doing it despite all the trouble. They don't even ask God to take that trouble away.
And you also tell God on them. He said, Lord, look upon their threats.
That was the other part of it.
Foil the plans of the wicked.
Right. Take note of their threats. Go ahead.
And it said that great grace was upon them all.
Mm-hmm.
Not just grace, great grace. So when you're in a difficult circumstance and you have to speak and testify about Christ, you're going to need His grace to empower you to do that. And as a result of their prayer, God gave them great grace.
Absolutely. Thank you for pointing that out. So that's over in verse 33. All right. So anything else on Acts 4 before we move on? But I wanted to come grab that piece since we didn't have time for it last week. All right. I'll take the silence as a no. So now let's go look at Matthew chapter 6. I debated on whether to include this or not, but it felt wrong to do a class called Great Prayers and not touch this place. So I think we needed to come here, and there's, of course, good stuff to learn here. But because this prayer is famous and familiar, sometimes we can get settled in the way we see it, and so I hope maybe we'll get lots of sharing that maybe we can see things in a new light, or, you know, not changing what we say about it, but help us see it in some different and new ways. So, Matthew chapter 6. What's the broader context to Matthew 6? What's going on?
Sermon on the Mount.
Sermon on the Mount. Do you know anything about this particular section of the Sermon on the Mount? What is Jesus doing in this part?
Teaching them how to pray.
He's teaching them how to pray, yes.
But he's dealing with the old commandments and laying out the new.
Right, and so sort of following the pattern of the whole sermon, but particularly in chapter 6, you have a don't do it this way, but do it this way pattern. And so right before we get the prayer section, beware of practicing your righteousness before men at the beginning of the chapter. So when you give to the poor, verse 2, don't do it this way, do it this way. And then he does prayer. Don't do it this way, do it this way. And then fasting, don't do it this way, but do it this way. So keep that in mind, that it's sort of set within this broader context of the sermon and this contrasting, not this way, but this way. So let's see what he has to say about prayer. But before we actually work the language of the prayer, there is some teaching on prayer that I don't think we can ignore while we're here. So can I get somebody to read for us Matthew chapter 6, verses 5 through 8?
5 through 8, God. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in a secret place, and your Father who sees in a secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetitions, as the heathens do, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you ask Him.
Thank you. All right, so I just want to open it up. What do you see here? What do you notice? Who wants to get us started?
Jesus tries to help them. He makes a distinction for them. And he, even in doing so, he helps them understand that prayer is intimate. It's not for show. It's not something you do so everybody can see. In fact, go do it by yourself. And then he makes another distinction. He says, don't pray with a bunch of different, you know, a lot of different words like the heathens do. Because, again, it's just vain repetition. But, again, it's meaningful. So he's talking about the intimacy of prayer and also how meaningful it is, how it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that first piece for a minute. Did you want to say something? Oh, go ahead.
I mean, all the other ones that we've been looking at have been examples of what to do. And here, he's explicitly saying, here's something you shouldn't do. There's a right and a wrong way.
Right. Kathleen, there you go.
And that's their reward. You know, the reward is like, okay, everybody sees you, there you go. And the person you're supposed to be doing it for God, there is no reward there if it's for vain repetition and just for people to say, look at him. So if there is no, there's nothing good for God or for yourself for doing it that way.
Absolutely. Rick?
It just appears it's people who forgot who they're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
It just totally missed the point.
Right. So if you're praying to be seen by other people, who are you actually talking to?
Other people.
You're talking to other people around you, but what is the appearance? So you see the problem here, that we're talking to God, but if you're praying so that other people will hear you, what does that say to God?
Well, he's not the focus.
He's a prop.
Yeah.
He's a prop. And you know it's a problem when you're reducing God, the great I am, to a prop so that you can show off to other people. And, I mean, what else does that say to God when you're praying with a focus on other people instead of on him? I think there's more to it, too.
You don't need him.
That we don't need him. That we're not really interested in the things that we're asking for. It's just a way to show. What else?
Don't care about him.
Don't care?
We're kidding ourselves, too. If we really think that we're... I mean, to me, it's just like... There's no... I can't think of the word I'm trying to say. There's no, I don't want to say reward, but you're not reaching God, if, especially if you know you're doing it for other people to see you. It's about you and not God.
Think about worldly things instead of heavenly things.
Right.
You're bringing accolades upon yourself and not giving God glory.
Yeah, it's putting the glory in the wrong place. And you've drawn our attention to it a couple times with the language about that they have their reward in full. Like they've already gotten everything they're going to get out of that. And what a measly reward that is, too, just for other people to think nice things about you compared to getting a response from heaven.
Well, I would dare say that they not all think that. Some of them may think, what a blowhard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're seeing it properly.
Right. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Also, God knows us, right? Mm-hmm. So he knows that thing that's down inside of us that we really, really like the praise of men a lot of times more than his praise.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it, and the other people may not see it or know that you're doing it for that. But he's saying, I know this. So are you really a person of prayer, that's how you walk, that's how you spend your life? You wake up and you're speaking with me, or do you go to the tabernacle? And I would compare that like worship now. You go, and that's when you, or is this who you are?
Right.
Like your person.
Absolutely. So this will circle back around to touch on what Jesus said, but let me ask you a question. Is Jesus saying here that it's wrong to pray in public?
No.
Why is that not what he's saying?
Well, we have examples of them praying like in the first century, like at church, like around with everybody else.
Yeah.
When they're worshiping with him, that's, we have those examples. And we have examples of, you know, the apostles all praying in front of people. We have those examples.
Right.
Whether it's, I mean, different types of prayer, different types of speaking to the Lord. I guess I'm going to use prayer as like communicating with the Lord, right?
Right.
We have examples of that, of them doing that in public. So it's clearly not forbidden.
Right.
But there's also clearly an appropriate way to do it.
Absolutely. Eric, you want to?
Just very obviously, he's about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He himself is going to do that
right
thing. He's going
right
to pray in public.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I was going to say, plus we just finished Acts 4.
Exactly.
What I also want to mention, though, it's interesting to me, the part about praying in a room, in secret. And there's a place in my house I love to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to meet you there, Lord. I'm ready to just share my heart and what's going on. And it's amazing when you have that mindset, you know you're going, it's about God.
Right.
It's not about me, it's not about anybody else, it's about God.
Absolutely. So most people in the room said no, or at least shook your head when I asked that question. That's prohibition against public prayer. So what makes the difference?
It's hypocrisy.
It's a matter of the heart.
It's intent.
It's about the heart.
Yeah.
It's about your heart there. As, well, you know, that usually comes back to the heart when you're dealing with things with God. But so it has to do with your heart. And so we have these two pieces we got here from working the first one about not, you know, praying to be seen by other people. And then we have this other one, too, about meaningless repetition.
There's a reason why he makes a distinction. He says, don't be like the hypocrites.
Right.
This is a practice of the Pharisees. They would go find street corners, and they would go street pray.
Right.
And they would do this to be seen, and they would do this oftentimes for people to see them, to gather attention for themselves. Mm-hmm. So he's using a direct, something very direct and something that the people of that time are very familiar with and probably annoyed by ad nauseum, right?
Mm-hmm.
To say, look, don't be like those people.
Absolutely. And so he picks all those people for, well, picks on, however you want to say that, for the first one. And then he picks on another group of people for the other contrast. So some translations say heathens. Mine says the Gentiles. And so it's taken a more pagan route. Other members of the audience that would have been more familiar with that, perhaps, that heap up these empty phrases. Go ahead.
And they do use it as a prop because people gather people unto themselves because they know that if it's spiritual, it has to do with God, people will talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have a platform.
Right.
And so they do it for the glory of themselves, for even unto themselves, glory to themselves, and people with itching ears. And so sometimes, and it's drawing people away from God, but more than that, taking the glory for themselves, using that as a platform, like a cloak of maliciousness.
Right.
Using the word of God for it.
That's right.
He just got through talking to them about doing things that please God and not drawing attention to yourself for your charitable
mm-hmm.
deeds. And then he just goes on to the prayer, and it's the
right.
same thing, that we do it because we love God and are trying to please him and not men.
Right.
I was just going to say, the Gentile way of worshiping would be very much, very methodic about how you're trying to get your God to do the thing that you want to do by your magic words or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, right? And so he's also saying, don't treat God like that, because he knows what you need.
Right.
That the point is not to say the magic words or to do the exact right, R-I-T-E, right,
mm-hmm.
you know, in order to get God to do your thing. This is an omnipresent, omnipotent being who knows what you need before you even ask. So what are you trying to do? Are you like the hypocrites who wants to be seen by men? Or are you like the heathens who just want God to do your thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And to piggyback on what he's saying, what brings to mind is 1 Kings,
mm-hmm.
the prophets of Baal, they kept calling all day long, but when you objectify God, it becomes the vending machine. I punch in the code and I
yep.
get out what I want. So, I mean, like, I love how you said that. Like, don't treat God like that.
Right. Is this a trap that we fall into?
Yeah,
absolutely.
What does it look like? How do we get there?
Treating God like Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having that deep relationship with God where prayer is not used as a form of getting something that you want or that you need, but actually coming into his presence, asking for forgiveness so that he can hear your prayer and worshiping him,
mm-hmm.
because that's, you know, it's an honor to be able to come before his presence, something that the Jews did not have before, but we do,
right?
You know, because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's not a like, and it's not a routine type of thing. It's how you develop that intimate relationship with him.
Right.
You talk to him. You worship him. You talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you grow in that intimacy with him.
Right. Thank you.
Growth, I think, is the word that I picked up on there. I think we fall into this trap when we don't practice this, right? If you only come to God when, you know, you need something, or when it's convenient, or maybe there's an opportunity to be seen of men, you know, you lose that ability, or you never grow that ability, mm-hmm. to pray appropriately. And so then all you really have is the vain repetition, the buzzwords that you might pick up on or whatever, and your heart's not in it.
Right.
Right. You're just saying the words because that's what you know. And you're not going to know very much if you're not practicing.
Yeah. Ren?
I look at the human relationship as an ultimate example. Parents with their children, they desire an open and honest communication with their children, their communication from their children to be from the heart. Nothing worse than to have a child that only is lovey-dovey to you when their friends are around, to make it look like you have a perfect relationship. I desire my girls to come to me with full hearts and share who they are and what's going on in their minds more than them doing it in front of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And say, I love you, Daddy, and all that stuff. I look at it that way.
Yeah.
When it comes to prayer, am I truly being God's child and sharing my life and who I am with them?
Absolutely.
I think, too, you know, we're looking at a chapter where Jesus is really redefining for the Jewish people what their relationship with God should be,
mm-hmm.
versus what it has been, and he's adding another dimension to it. And we as Christians, we have access to all these things, all these blessings through Christ, by way of Christ, and we still default to what these people were doing before this chapter was even, you know, lived out.
Right.
Because again, we're used to having God at kind of at this reach. But if we embrace the fact that we're his children and we
mm-hmm.
can talk to him on a daily basis, we, you know, his spirit lives in us, all these different things that we have through Christ, then prayer, it's no longer means to an end. It is the end. Like, that's what I end up doing as a result of my relationship with God. It's not something I do because I want something from God. I already have everything I need.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's good. So we need to move into the text of the prayer soon. And I think it's interesting, just from our modern perspective, that the stuff we just talked about sits right next to this prayer. Because sometimes vain repetition happens when, you know, among us, and we just, you know, we say the same things and it just sort of gets stale, and we're just doing it because we feel like we have to, and if you get your own phrases and your own repetition going. And so that danger exists for us. But, and we've sort of avoided this, but especially in other religious groups, this prayer right here becomes a source of repetition that is used to the point of being vain or meaningless, because it's, once you repeat it for the 5,000th time, it's hard to say it and mean it, right? Or even know what you're saying. You just, you know it well enough that it comes right out of your mouth without actually going through your head. So, interesting that these are sitting right here next to each other. But this prayer is still full of useful things for us too, so that's no reason to avoid it. So, can I get somebody to read for us Matthew 6 verses 9 through, go ahead and go down through 15.
Pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses.
Thank you. So, what do you see? Where do you want to start? There are lots of things to talk about here. I'm not sure. I doubt we'll get to all of it, so someone get it started somewhere.
One thing I think about when I look at this versus the other prayers we've studied is how general this is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just super generic, right? Which is fine, because he's giving them an example of what to do.
Right.
But in the other prayers you said, it's very, very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the one we just finished up,
right.
I'd give me boldness and continuous, like, super specific, and it was answered immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right? And this is just super general.
Right.
And Which also made me always wonder, like, why do people just repeat this one? Like, it's like, no, this is like, it's almost like it's a great template for us to use when you're learning how to develop your prayer life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but I kind of need, I almost feel like it's something like I need to fill in my own little parts in here. Like, don't just forgive me my debts. Like, no, what do I really need to be forgiven for? Mm-hmm. Like, get specific, Jen. What did you struggle with today?
Yeah.
Like, and then versus like just using that, because that's what these other examples that we've gone through have shown us, is that we need to be specific when we're speaking to God. And when we're struggling with things, like, tell it, like, he knows it, but we need to go to him with that and relinquish that to him, that we are struggling with whatever it is we're struggling with, because he's there to help us, not just go through some general list,
right?
But be like specific with what we need, what we're grateful for, the blessings we've, all of those things, being very specific with them.
Yeah, thank you for that observation. Eric?
I was just going to say, if you had asked me, you know, how does the Lord's Prayer begin earlier today, I would have said, oh, it begins with praise. But reading it again, it actually starts with relationship. It's our Father. Those are the first words, right? It's not God, right, which he is our God, but it starts with relationship. And I think recognizing the relationship first, as I think what Brandon was saying back there, you know,
yeah,
you have that relationship first, and that relationship is a springboard for for praise.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that for just a minute. This introduction, "Our Father who is in heaven," is so common to us that it. I read something recently that sort of stirred me up about it, and I'd never. As soon as I read it, it made sense, but it hadn't occurred to me before. This pairing is a little bit odd. What sort of things does Father imply? What comes along with that word?
Authority.
Relationship.
Ownership.
Guardian.
Respect.
Love.
Personal. Maybe.
Personal.
Sure. So, and maybe there's a sense of closeness with that too. But the pairing with it, I see. Or go ahead.
Okay, so, and I don't mean to interrupt your thought, this came to mind. So, before this time, the Jews referred to, like, Yahweh, they were afraid.
Yeah.
God's name's not even really mentioned.
Right.
Because, again, it's so unapproachable.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we are now, Jesus is saying, our Father.
Yeah.
Right? Again, we're knocking down a wall. Add another dimension to the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's where you're going, but it just came to mind. But that the idea that we go from Yahweh to our Father. They always talked about Abraham being your father. They always bragged about that.
Yeah.
So now God is my Father.
Yeah, thank you for pointing out that shift. So there is a closeness maybe that you see in that. So our Father in heaven. Do you see how those things seem odd to sit next to each other? But we've heard that so much and start our own prayers that way so often that it doesn't register anymore. But Father has this level of closeness, and yet he's in heaven. And so that sort of, it takes away, when you see both of them, the danger of getting too buddy-buddy loose with God, because he's the Father in heaven. But then again, it also tears down the temptation to let him remain the distant overlord that we only come before occasionally. So it maintains closeness and yet humility before it. Brent?
I think it's a comforting concept that we have a kinship with deity.
Absolutely.
You know, when I'm saying this, I had this thought. It's the bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
The blood. So with my Father, I'm sharing that same blood. And when I think of Christ dying on the cross, I'm his child, I got the blood covering me. It's a deep relationship.
Yeah. Rick,
I see. I think about verse 1, you know, where he says, if you practice your righteousness before others, that's what you get from those other little people. Or, you know, you have no reward from your Father who is in heaven, meaning he is so great. I mean, the in heaven part is, you know, for me, it's not a distance thing. It's my Father's in heaven. My Father's over everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just like has a little piece of land here.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the family farm. This is, you know, he's the king of the universe, is another term that's used.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick. You want to say something?
Can it be sort of like a little bit of a reminder, like the relationship that we're talking about, that you don't need to go through someone else? Mm-hmm. Like some people think they need to mm-hmm. pray through a priest or through someone else that they can't speak to God. And so it's letting you know.
Yeah, we've got access.
We are the people.
We've got access. Absolutely, thank you.
It's the kinship and the holy place. Mm-hmm. And that our Father, Lord, you know, the kinship, and then where he is, his holy place. Mm-hmm. Identifying he's there. This is where he is.
Yeah, thank you. All right, what else is a prayer you want to talk about? Someone else get us started, someone.
I just want to say the next thing is, and we maybe don't do this enough in our prayers, it's about God's name, it's about God's kingdom, it's about his will.
Mm-hmm.
There's three biggies right there that puts everything else in perspective, and those things happen, you know, through us. We glorify his name, we keep his will, you know, it's the things that he, I mean, we can do that, we can glorify God in that way, but remembering who he is.
Yeah, there's a neat shift in the language in the middle of this prayer, and I've underlined it in my Bible. So verse 9, your name, 10, your kingdom, your will, but then verse 11, our daily bread, our debts, and do not lead us into temptation. It's from you to us. But that was a recent thing that I came across where somebody went through and noted those words right there, the shift from your to us. Go ahead.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
So where it says your kingdom come, this mm-hmm. is Jesus' prayer, teaching us how to pray.
Right.
He had not died yet.
Right.
So what kingdom is he talking about? His kingdom when he dies, the kingdom
mm-hmm.
that we're going to inherit when we finally go home, what kingdom?
Okay. So if you don't know, sometimes my practice is to open it up to the room and just let's see what people say. So I'll invite you all to say something, and then I can say something at the end.
Talking about the church.
Talking about the church? What else?
So he was praying for the church?
I think that's... Oh, go ahead.
It's God's will. So, like, it's when we talk about kings, we're talking about sovereignty, we're talking about God's will basically taking place on earth. So the church, yes, but also God's rule.
Mm-hmm.
So this kingdom that, again, to think about people who are waiting on another kingdom that wasn't going to come, the kingdom Jesus is talking about is a spiritual kingdom where God's will is going to be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Because
it's
when he died, that's when he that's the kingdom. I mean, I know the Jews were waiting for that kingdom, were waiting for that Messiah. And the Messiah was already here. So when he died, then that's when basically
he's
fulfilled.
He's
right?
Using language that they use, but he means something totally different. They prayed for the Messiah to come, and they wanted to be liberated from Roman occupation, but
right.
Jesus is liberating them from
that
sin.
That was in the plan.
Yeah.
That was in God's plan.
Yeah, so,
I know, but I've always, the kingdom, yeah. what is it?
The promise of salvation. From
okay.
sin, from the bondage of sin
okay.
is coming. So that's the freedom, that's the kingdom in which God is going to reign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the church as well?
Yes.
And
so
then
the place
future?
So I don't think we have to take it in one way only. And with the word kingdom, there's a tension that exists within it between what has already happened and what has not yet come. And so, you know, you've heard the phrase, the time between the times is where we are now. And so in one sense, the kingdom has come. And like even, you know, in my Bible, it's on the same page, 4 verse 7, or page back, 4 verse 17. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's coming now. It's soon. The kingdom's at hand. And yet, the kingdom has not come in its fullness. And so there, you know, there's a piece of it that has already happened. And there's a piece of it that hasn't happened yet. And so maybe when this was said originally, it could be taken slightly differently than we would now. But I still think we can pray this in full genuineness that the kingdom would come. not, or Brent, go ahead. I'll let you finish what I was thinking.
I have no idea what you were thinking. It is part of a complete phrase, though, a complete thought. Thy
right.
kingdom come, thy will be done
right.
in earth as it is in heaven, or mm-hmm. on earth as it is in heaven.
Right.
And that's what Jesus is praying for God's will to be done.
Right.
Jesus knows what that will is. Jesus knows what's going to happen to him. And he's praying for this kingdom to come so that God's will be fulfilled.
Right. So some people that I've read, I'll come to you.
Okay.
Some people that I've read have even said that your will be done is just a restatement of the same idea as your kingdom come, that those shouldn't even be distinguished between each other, that they're just sort of two ways of saying the same thing. I don't know if I'd go that far, but there is potential for that, you know, to see how those ideas are so closely connected that it's hard to pull them apart.
Yeah, this phrase is only found in Matthew,
mm-hmm.
but interesting, it's found 33 times.
Which argument, one? Which phrase? Thy will be done?
Thy kingdom.
The kingdom come.
Mark 9:1 teaches that some of you all will be standing here when you see the kingdom come
right.
with power.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, which kingdom? And I always say, why be so narrow?
Mm-hmm.
You got both. You got the kingdom, which is the church, but you got God ruling up until the point where his son returns.
Right.
And then we all go into another kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be in the first one in order to get to the second one.
Yeah.
So when I teach non-members, the thought is God has a place for his people. He's a king. He's going to rule.
Mm-hmm.
In one aspect, he rules the world, but he also has a kingdom of individuals who are being prepared to live with him forever. Got to be in the first one in order to get to heaven.
Yeah. Thank you for cleaning up my mess.
You know something? Remember when the people asked, they rejected God as their king.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know that's why they got a king. They was looking at the Amorites and all those folks with kings. So the people really didn't, God's people didn't really understand fully the way we do with the written word now, that he was king of their hearts. Mm-hmm. He was their king. That physical thing he was still teaching, and he's teaching us still that the things of this world should not rule us, the laws of the world, but his laws should rule our heart. And we should be subjected to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And that's a growing and learning process of the gravity of,
right.
you know, that.
Right. And like you said, King in our hearts, too. Because I think one way that we can pray your kingdom come is that the kingdom would come in the hearts of other people who don't yet know God, that more people would come in and be a part of this kingdom. Your kingdom come to the hearts where it has not yet, you know, taken over. So. All right, what else do you want to say or notice in the prayer? Where else do you want to go? Cole.
I wanted to note the minimalism that's allowed in prayers. Verse 7, he talks about how, you know, we don't need to babble on like the pagans. We don't need to, you know, use a lot of words to explain our point to God, because he already knows what we're coming to him for. So it's not, you know, don't have to talk to him for hours and hours and hours on end, which is not, I'm not saying it's not okay to do.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes we just need to say something quick. You know, if you already know what we're coming for, it, you know, it can be a quick thank you, it can be a quick praise, it can be, you know, just anything minimalistic that, you know, that this continues your relationship throughout mm-hmm. the day with God. You don't have to, you know, necessarily go off to, you know, leave your desk while you're working. If, you know, if nobody's looking at you, you could sit there and say something quick to them while you're, you know, throughout your day. But not, it's not a, you know, a lengthy process. It doesn't have to be. You know, he knows what you're going to come to him for. He knows what you need throughout the day. So
mm-hmm. it helps us see the range of possibilities in prayer. I think as far as this quarter has gone, this is the shortest actual prayer we've looked at, and yet, I mean, here it is. It doesn't have to go on and on and on to still be effective. Go ahead.
I think when it talks about your will be done, sometimes we think we know what our will is, and maybe we try to tell God how to do it or what we think is best. And I just think about His will being done, and it will be done the way He wants it to. And the distinction, God, help us to know Your will for mm-hmm. us.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, the two words. We all know we all pray for Him equally, differently, all of us. But we all know that we have to go with Him because He has power for all of us. So no matter how you pray equally, He knows what you're thinking in your heart because He has power for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'll come to you. Diane?
Verse 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then 14 and 15, that's some of the scariest words in the Bible to me.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we can be doing everything right, but if we're not forgiving our mm-hmm. brethren, we're lost.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
Yeah. So we've looked at some of the other prayers we looked at earlier in the quarter were these, you know, penitent prayers asking for forgiveness because they had done wrong. And this adds that piece to it that we haven't seen yet. And it's a scary piece. So thank you for that, Eric.
Yeah. Right after, you know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, we get, give us this day our daily bread. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, well, that's just asking for the things that you need, and, you know, don't ask, like, for more than that, and for luxury and ease and all that kind of stuff. But I really think that the lesson here is talking about anxiousness, because that's what he talks about here in a few verses when you drop down. He tells you to seek first the kingdom of God, which he did in his prayer, and then... And all these things are going to be added to you. You know, sufficient is the day for its own strife or problem, mm-hmm. whatever, however your version renders it. But give us this day our daily bread. Give us what we need to get through today.
Right.
And let tomorrow worry about itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I'll come back to you now. Sorry, I skipped over you.
No. I'm reminded of Jesus when he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. Lord, I would that this cup passed from me,
mm-hmm.
but nevertheless, your will be done. And in our prayers, I don't think we very seldom ask, Lord, is this your will for my life, for the things that we're facing and going through? And if this is your will, Lord, let it be done, whatever your will is. But give me strength and endurance to make it through it. Because it could be us, whatever we, you know, whatever happens to us in our lives and whatever path God leads us
mm-hmm.
to on, we don't think about, Lord, this is God's will for our lives. We think about the worst sometimes when something's happening to us and asking God for deliverance, but He may want you to go through that path for a season
mm-hmm.
Until you get, you know, for refinement, for endurance, and for patience. And we should be saying, God, whatever your will is, let it be done in my life for your glory. Whatever it is. Because he said, we don't know what we should be praying as we are.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever God's will is.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I agree with that. Give us this day our daily bread is our dependence on him.
Mm-hmm.
Our, you know, we get with toast in the toaster and, you know, it, because I had enough money to go to the grocery store and get it. We need to reflect on God's provision for us.
Absolutely. So, thinking about how I want to do this, because I've got a way in my head that I think I can tie some of this together. Think about what was man's relationship with food like for most of history?
Scarce, and they had to go in there.
Well, you had to work for it, yeah.
Scarce, and you had to work for it. And part of the scarcity and difficulty in getting food was a reminder of where that food really came from. Because up until, you know, very recently, generally, broadly speaking, you were totally beholden to the weather and whatever else was going on around you. These things that very clearly are within the control of God and not at all in our control. And so when you're totally beholden to the weather and the ground itself and the climate and all these things, it's so easy to see that, yeah, this is coming from God. And so you pray to God, give us our daily bread. And it's easy now to lose sight of that when there's always bread on the shelf at the grocery store and it's easy to get and cheap. Eric?
I was just going to say, I think there's a great symmetry between this prayer and Genesis 3, the curse on man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread.
Right.
And I think because we live in such an awesome country that we're blessed that we can go to the store and we can buy. But if you travel to other countries,
mm-hmm.
they're living day to day. I mean, look,
right.
you know, whether they're farmers, whether they're fishermen, it doesn't, I think, you know, like the fishermen back in Jesus' time,
mm-hmm.
Peter, you know, he told him to throw the, because he wasn't catching anything.
Right.
And he caught fish. So, you know, we seem to forget because we live where we live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still nowadays, you go to Mexico, Honduras, or, you know, anywhere, you can go to the Philippines and you still have people in poverty that they live day to day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
We hardly know what daily bread means.
No, we don't. Yeah.
And so, with all of this, too, have there ever been people among God's people who have gone hungry?
Yes.
And so, how does this fit together? How do you put the pieces together of the prayer in general?
Just remind you that the God you want to go hungry.
Yeah, I think the, so going back to the, your will be done, I think that has to sit above all of it, because it seems that sometimes it's been God's will that some of his people have gone without bread and for a time. And so that the your will be done piece sits above everything else and changes everything else. So we can still ask for the daily bread, but it still sits underneath your will be done, whatever that means.
He never promised we were going to suffer anything.
Exactly.
So whether it is going a day without food, you know, going a day without food, it is his will above everything else, and it's always his purpose in everything
mm-hmm.
that goes on in
right.
our lives. You know, like, I mean, when she was talking about like our timelines and, you know, that when we've done over everything, like, and we pray for specific things, like, I mean, it wasn't our choice that our children are 7 years apart, y'all. Like, that was crazy. But, like, now, like, looking back at it,
mm-hmm.
like, I can't, and we would look at our lives, like, I can't imagine my life any other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if there had been another kid in there?
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be Josh.
Right.
Right? It's like there, like, so you have to think, like, so looking back at that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's just like a really easy example, to, you
right.
know, to throw out, right? Because in the midst of those 7 years was like, okay, what's happening? What's wrong? What's the problem? Pray to God. Pray, you know, do this. Go here. Do this. And the whole time, this is the way that God intended our lives to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine it any other way. So in the middle of those years when I'm questioning and we're looking at this, like, you know, well, now
mm-hmm.
I've got my Caleb and Josh and I can't imagine my life any other way.
Yeah.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
so it is like a short, in the grand scheme of like time, right. That is a very short example of seeing things come to fruition
yeah.
the way they're supposed to be.
Right. And so I think this ties us back to something we were talking about earlier on, that it comes back to your heart, and in this case, a heart that trusts in God, of deep trusting faith to say, your will be done. Now, I still, please give me my daily bread, but in all of this, your will is going to be done, and I'm going to trust you, Lord, to answer this prayer in your way, in your time. It's your will above all else.
That's the wisdom of the prayer, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't pray to God to confirm his will. I pray to get my will. My prayers are selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I need, I want, I gotta have. Man, I was talking to David the other day. We were talking about prayer, and he said, "What are you saying?" I said, "Well, look." He said, "You tell the Lord to look." I said, "Yeah, look at the situation." I'm not praying to. He knows who He is, but that's the wisdom of this. It's telling us to recognize who He is. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to be selfish. I'm still going to be self-serving. I'm still human. It's just like Jen's saying. I don't have control of my life. You got control of it. Your will be done, but you got to. And my grandfather used to say, prop us up on the leaning side. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's we're begging for His help under His will. That's the wisdom of this.
Absolutely.
I don't have any interest.
I mean, you know you're waiting a long time when your car seat expired, y'all. I tell you.
Yeah.
You know you're waiting a long time.
Thank y'all for a good discussion. Appreciate it.
It did.